Greetings, this is podcast number 15 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. Today we have three segments. In the first one, we'll discuss class warfare in the United States. The second one, we'll look at Sean Hannity's big lie about Iraqi WMDs. In the final third segment, we'll revisit the issue of whether liberal activism has made life better for the average American. At the end of the podcast, I'll give music credits for the songs you'll hear throughout the show. Let's get right into it. Let's talk a little about class warfare in the United States. A lot of the times you hear or see on the news a snippet here, a snippet there about some statistic about poverty or hunger or income. They come out at various times and no one ever weaves them all together. Well, recently one story came out and it just triggered memories in me of a whole bunch of other recent statistics and news stories. So I thought I'd string them all together for you and tell an interesting story. The news item that triggered this in my mind was the following. Quote, hunger in American households has risen by 43% over the last 5 years, according to an analysis of U.S. Department of Agriculture data released yesterday. The analysis, completed by the Center on Hunger and Poverty at Brandeis University, shows that more than 7 million people have joined the ranks of the hungry since 1999. End quote. Now, how many people is that? It says 38.2 million Americans live in households that suffer directly from hunger and food insecurity, including nearly 14 million children. Now, I want to be straight with you. When we talk about hunger here and food insecurity, we're not talking about people starving. What it means is, and I'm quoting now actually from the actual USDA study, it means that people, quote, were at times uncertain of having or unable to acquire enough food for all household members because they had insufficient money and other resources for food. End quote. It says many of the food insecure households avoided hunger by making their diet simpler with just a few basic foods and not eating a balanced diet. But a full third of those households actually had one or more household members hungry at least sometime during the year because they couldn't afford enough food. So that's what we're talking about. It's not starvation, but it's still bad, and it's obviously completely unacceptable in the richest country in the world. Let me tell you what the Brandeis Poverty and Hunger Center director said. Quote, this is an unexpected and even stunning outcome. This chronic level of hunger so long after the recession ended means that it is a man-made problem. Congress and the White House urgently need to address growing income inequality and the weakening of the safety net in order to get this epidemic under control. End quote. Fat chance. This is the fifth straight year that the hunger and food insecurity stats have gone up. The same way poverty has increased every year under the reign of George W. Bush. This is just as the Bushians knew would happen and wanted to happen under their transfer wealth from everyone else to the rich policies. Now, when I read this story about increasing hunger and about growing income inequality as one of the causes, I remembered another story I had seen. That story was about income inequality from the perspective of CEO compensation as opposed to average production worker pay. In 1982, the average CEO compensation was 42 times that of a production worker. Now, that's a big gap, but all right, you know, maybe it seems within the realm of reason. I don't know. You know what the ratio is now? It used to be 42 to 1. Now it's 431 to 1 in 2004. 431 to 1. In other words, the income gap has increased 10 times since 1982. Talking about it in 2004 dollars, let's say the actual average of the worker pay was, it's actually $27,460, but I'm just going to make it $30,000 because the numbers are a little easier that way. So let's say it's $30,000. That means in 1982, the executive would have made about $1.3 million. Okay, the CEO gets $1.3 million, the production worker gets $30,000. It's a gap, but, you know, all right. We can live with that. But in the year 2004, the average production worker gets $30,000 and the CEO gets not $1.3 million, but $12 million. How do you like them apples? Now, I really like the imaginative ways that the people who write these studies come up with to illustrate the situation. Listen to this. Quote, to put the CEO worker pay gap in perspective, we calculated how much average production worker pay would be worth today if it had grown at the same rate as CEO pay. In 2004, the average worker would have made $110,000 compared to the actual average of $27,460. Similarly, if the federal minimum wage had grown at the same rate as CEO pay, it would have been $23 in 2004 instead of $5.15. End quote. Everyone other than those at the top gets screwed. When the wealthy set their own salaries, and they set everyone else's salaries, and unbridled greed becomes societally acceptable, what else do you think will happen? The salaries at the top explode, and those at the bottom, and in the middle as well, stagnate or decline. Now, if you bring up a subject like this to a right-winger, they will immediately go into their routine.
Meow! Income redistribution! You're for income redistribution! Class warfare! You're starting class warfare!
Well, actually, there is income redistribution going on from everyone else to the rich, as I just illustrated. There is class warfare going on, conducted by the rich against everyone else. This leads into another group of recent stories I've seen. There's at least one multi-billionaire who admits this. He's said it repeatedly over the years, Warren Buffett. Back in 2003, in his annual letter to the shareholders of his Berkshire Hathaway company, he wrote, quote, if class warfare is being waged in America, my class is clearly winning, close quote. But don't think he was bragging or saying that's a good thing. No, because in a 2005 interview with Lou Dobbs, what he said was, quote, it's class warfare, my class is winning, but they shouldn't be, end quote. How does Warren Buffett propose that we change the tide of battle so that his class won't be winning? Well, one way is to change the tax system. Not to some kind of phony flat tax system that'll really benefit the wealthy, but as follows. This is what he said in a Fortune magazine interview just a couple of weeks ago. Quote, we have, in my view, a taxation system that's much too flat already. What has gone on in this country in recent years is a huge benefit to the very rich and not that much relief to people down below. Frankly, I think that Bill, it's Gates he's referring to, I believe. Frankly, I think that Bill and I should have a higher tax rate on the income we get. We pay less than half the rate that I was paying 25 years ago when I was making a lot less money. They have really taken care of the rich. End of quote. Well, of course they have. Of course they've taken care of the rich. As George Bush famously said, and as incorporated into song,
"This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base."
Let me just mention here, I don't really know a whole hell of a lot about Warren Buffett. I'm sure he's no saint, but it appears at least that he's not one of the greedy right-wingers who infest our nation. It really annoys the hell out of me when right-wingers charge that Democrats are using class warfare arguments, or even that they're actually fomenting class warfare. Pointing out economic injustice is not conducting class warfare. The economic injustice is the class warfare. We're just pointing it out. It's like when Southerners accused Martin Luther King Jr. of causing racial conflict when he marched against segregation. King's exposing and protesting against racial injustice was not the cause of racial conflict. The racial conflict was caused by the oppression of the African-American population. Likewise, any class warfare that exists is caused by the right-wing assault on the financial integrity of the poor and the working class and the middle class, not by those who expose it. And you know what? As Gomer Pyle used to say, "Surprise, surprise, surprise." For those of you who are too young to remember, you'll just have to accept that reference as something that was very funny many years ago. The surprise is that the American public seems to be waking up, which is the fourth related story that I've recently seen. A poll in October said that 68% of Americans said they would raise taxes on those making more than $200,000 a year. That's over 2 out of 3 Americans would raise taxes on those making more than $200,000 a year. That 68% knows what's going on. On the other hand, maybe that 68% is misguided, and they should listen to Bill O'Reilly, the multimillionaire who rails constantly against income redistribution. Those 68% are supporting socialism and must be re-educated. I say, make them watch 5 episodes of O'Reilly's TV show, The Factor, every day for a month. That should about do it. O'Reilly better get a hold of Warren Buffett also and knock some sense into him and other traitors to their class as well. O'Reilly has a lot of work cut out for him, doesn't he? In all seriousness, O'Reilly is, unlike Warren Buffett, one of the greedy, selfish right-wingers who infest our nation. It's a little bit heartening, isn't it, though, that 68% of the American public seems to be onto the scam. So there you have it. Hunger up, poverty up, increasing wage inequality one cause, class warfare acknowledged, and the public waking up to it. Right-wingers, prepare to be tarred and feathered and driven out of town on a rail.
The kind of catapults of propaganda. In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again. The kind of catapults of propaganda. Catapults of propaganda.
Catapult the propaganda indeed. In this segment, we'll listen to master propagandist Sean Hannity apply the big lie technique to the area of Iraqi WMDs. Hannity's guest is Representative Gerald Nadler from New York City, a liberal Democrat. In the interest of full disclosure, let me mention that back in the mid and late 1970s, I lived in Manhattan on the west side where Nadler was then a local Democratic official, and I was part of the same political grouping as Nadler, which was known then as the West Side Kids. Believe it or not, before he went over to the dark side, although maybe he was already on the dark side and we didn't know it then, Dick Morris was part of the same political grouping. I knew Dick Morris also way back when. Enough of my illustrious personal history. Here's the relevant excerpt from the exchange between Hannity and Nadler.
Here's what you're doing. You are politicizing a policy disagreement. Let me point out why this is true.
No, I'm not.
Wait a minute. Let me finish. Bill Clinton said about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. Al Gore said it. The guy you voted for, John Kerry, in the lead up to the war in 2003, said leaving Saddam unfettered with nuclear weapons or WMDs is unacceptable. If you don't believe Saddam's a threat with nuclear weapons, don't vote for me. Iraq's WMDs pose a real and grave threat to America. If you were fair, Congressman, if you were not a political partisan, you would be saying the same thing about the guy you voted for. But you're not fair. You're not balanced. You're a partisan.
Well, of course I'm partisan, but I'm also fair. The fact is that I believe that a lot of Democratic senators and Republican senators and congressmen were misled by the administration.
So you're blaming John Kerry's public statements on George Bush? Well, I mean,
I think that if I were to find a flaw with John Kerry, it would be that he didn't realize.
I guess if we have a hangover, George Bush's fault too.
He should not have relied, perhaps, on what he was being told by the administration.
Then a little later in the segment, they revisit the issue.
I love your liberal logic. If Bush says it about WMDs, it's a lie. If Kerry, if Edwards, if Clinton and Gore, the UN and French say it, even that's Bush's fault.
Everybody who talked about that at that time was relying on the information they got from the Bush administration.
Oh, I know. All right.
Because they were in charge of the intelligence agencies.
In this day and age.
After Hannity said, "You're blaming John Kerry's public statements on George Bush," did you hear the little snot-nose laughing?
You're blaming
John. I think I am.
Then for good measure, Hannity adds, "I guess if we have a hangover, it's George Bush's fault, too." I've heard Hannity pull this on countless Democrats, liberals, and progressives on the show. I gotta give Nadler a lot of credit. He's one of the few to point out that Kerry got his information from the Bush administration. Sometimes Hannity won't do it in such a straightforward way. He'll read a Kerry quote about WMD, and then when the guest says that, "Oh, you see, that's a terrible lie by George Bush," Hannity will triumphantly reveal it to be Kerry's words. Substantively, of course, like all right-wing propaganda, what Hannity's saying is based on falsehoods. When Bill Clinton said whatever he said about WMDs when he was president, that was years before we went to war. Intelligence changes, and quoting what he said years ago makes no sense. As far as the French and everyone else saying that Saddam had WMDs, yes, they were all saying that, but once Saddam let the inspectors back in, and on the eve of war, the inspectors couldn't find any WMDs, and the inspectors kept saying to the U.S., "Please tell us where the WMDs are, and we'll go find them," and the U.S. would tell them locations, and the inspectors would say, "Well, there's no WMDs there either." Once that was evident, people started to have doubts. And on the eve of the war, all the other countries were saying, wait, give the inspectors more time. Maybe they'll determine that there aren't any WMDs. So again, Hannity quoting and saying that the other countries said there were WMDs, before we went back in and started to inspect. Now, as you heard, it's kind of hard to get in a word edgewise with Hannity. And if you start saying something that effectively contradicts him, he starts talking over you, laughing, and just doing everything he can to distract the audience from what you're saying. What I would have done is, I would have said, "Hey, wait a minute, Hannity. Where do you think Kerry would get his intelligence information from? Does Kerry have his own CIA? Does Kerry have his own NSA? Does Kerry have his own Pentagon? Is there something called the KIA, the Kerry Intelligence Agency? I don't think so. Anything Kerry's going to know about foreign affairs intelligence matters is going to be something that he gets from the current administration. And the current administration was the Bush administration. That's where he got his information from. So what do we have? Bush tells a lie to Kerry. Kerry believes it and repeats the lie. Then you say we can't criticize Bush for lying because Kerry said it also. How absurd. Hannity isn't the only one who uses this tactic of quoting Kerry on WMD. It's used by many other right-wingers. So now, when you hear them use it, you'll have an effective way to rebut it. Okay, now we're going to have one of my corrections, clarifications, and additions segments. This is where if something I said in a previous podcast needs to be corrected, clarified, or added to, I'll do it. I want to make sure everything that is in this podcast continues to be 100% rock solid. This segment relates to podcast number 12, where I spoke about 15 terrible things liberals have done. I set out 15 examples of how the average American has benefited from liberal activism. Near the end of that segment, I mentioned that Republicans had fought against all of these 15 benefits for the average American. The listener calling himself Proud Liberal Democrat sent in what he said was a correction on 3 of the 15 items. He said that the Food and Drug Administration and federal meatpacking inspections were first set up under Teddy Roosevelt in 1906, and Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican. He also said that Richard Nixon set up the EPA, and Richard Nixon was a Republican. Regarding Nixon, I don't think anyone could reasonably call him an environmentalist, and whatever credit he and the Republican Party get for having set up the EPA 35 years ago has long since been used up and gone way into the negative debit column by the actions of subsequent Republican presidents like Ronald Reagan and even more so George W. Bush. It was liberals and progressives who fought for the Environmental Protection Administration to be set up, not conservatives. Regarding Teddy Roosevelt and the Food and Drug Act and the Meatpacking Act, Teddy Roosevelt was a Republican, but he was a liberal on these issues, a progressive on these issues. Believe it or not, there were real liberals and real progressives 100 years ago in the Republican Party. Hard to imagine that when you look at the Republican Party now. Conservatives, right-wingers, fought back then and still fight now against protections for the average person. And liberals, progressives, fought back then and still fight now for these protections. For example, a prominent opponent of the Food and Drug Act that Teddy Roosevelt wanted was a conservative Republican, a right-winger, Senator Nelson Aldrich of Rhode Island. He said the FDA would undermine, quote, the liberty of all the people of the United States, end quote. He implied that the goal of the bill's supporters was to impose socialism on the United States. Does this right-wing gobbledygook from 1906 sound familiar to your 2005 21st century ears? The same propaganda the right wing was spewing back then, a century ago, they're still spewing now. For present-day Republicans to claim credit for what Teddy Roosevelt did 100 years ago is as absurd as when present-day Republicans try and claim credit in the civil rights arena for what Abraham Lincoln did. The Republican Party has flipped on civil rights, and it's also flipped on anything that Teddy Roosevelt ever stood for in the area of consumer protection. So 15 out of the 15 protections the average American enjoys, which I attributed to liberal activism, are valid. That being said, it would have been better had I kept the word Republican out of that piece altogether and just used the word conservative. The true split is not between people who call themselves Republicans and who call themselves Democrats. It's between liberal progressive thought and conservative right-wing thought. Lest there be any doubt about the true goal of the right-wingers, let's listen to their head cheerleader in a rare moment of honesty.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well. Listen to the glee with which Rush Limbaugh says this.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Rush Limbaugh, Senator Nelson Aldrich, they're all the same. It's up to liberals and progressives to make sure that these right-wingers are not able to do something about that as well. That'll about wrap it up for today. My email address is rational@adelphia.net. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what you like and what you don't like. You can call in and leave a recorded comment for me to play. My Skype name is Jack from Blast the Right. You can also call in and leave a recorded message on this number, 310-933-5891, 310-933-5891. Now let me give some music credits here. All this music is furnished for free. The least I can do is properly credit the artists and websites. The opening music was from L.A. Nightmare by 22 Caliber. Check them out at music.podshow.com. Catapult the Propaganda was by Nise Music, N-I-S-E, music.com. Right out of my original home state of New York. The Blues was titled Not the One Blues by Burnshee Thornside, available at magnatune.com. The Bush clip to music was from You Razzle Dazzledom by Bill Jacobs at billjacobs.us. And the closing music will be Taking My Country Back by Honky Tonkers for Truth out of Nashville. There's a link on my podcast homepage to a music resources page. There you can find links to all these websites. As always, if you enjoyed the podcast, tell a friend about it. If they don't know about podcasting, turn them on to that as well. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
We had a bundle in the treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're drowning deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get. Then you gave tax breaks to the millionaires, and you tried to make the working man pay. But you can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Well, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You got too many fancy friends for me. The Saudis treat you like you're royalty. You blew the budget and you bossed our